like to call to order the June 8th meeting of the Town of Vail Planning Environmental Commission. First off, Greg, I hear this is our last meeting with you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for all your work and good luck with the new role. So appreciate everything you've done for us over the past couple of years that I've been on it. I know you were here before then, but thanks for everything.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you.
We have one item on our main agenda today. This is being re-noticed. So is it being continued or re-noticed?
Nope. This will be re-noticed, so there's no action necessary for this item today.
Okay, sounds good. Is that just notice didn't make it in time or?
The scope of the application changed a little bit that required another section be added. So we re-noticed it for that reason.
So there's no action needed on main agenda item 3.1. The next thing on our agenda is approval of the minutes from the May 11th meeting. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
I'll second.
There's a motion by Commissioner Redeker and a second by Commissioner Brown. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None opposed. That carries unanimously. The minutes are approved. And then the only other thing on our agenda for today is an information update on the exterior energy offset program. I know it's been a minute since we heard the last revision of that. So, Greg, do you have anything? Or are you handing it right over to the applicant?
I'll be handing it right over to the applicant as an information item. We're not looking for a specific motion today. So this is just more of an update for you.
Sounds good.
Great. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for your time today. It's good to see you. For those members that I haven't seen in person here yet, congratulations on your appointments and thanks for your service. I'm Kristen Bertuglia. I'm the Director of the Environmental Sustainability Department for the Town of Vail, and I'll turn it over to Cam to introduce himself.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Cameron Millard. I'm a clean energy specialist with the Town of Vail, and I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Great. Okay, we're going to get started. I know some of you have seen this program before, but we're here today to talk to you about the exterior energy offset program, otherwise known in other parts of the state and mountain communities as REMP. It used to be called Renewable Energy Mitigation Program. So over in Aspen, that's what they used to call it. But it's more reflective of, more accurate to call it an exterior energy offset program. So I'll start with the story. I did this for the town council, and I'll do that the same here. And some of you may have read through the packet today and thought, well, this looks familiar. Around 2009, snowmelt and outdoor heated spaces were becoming all the rage. Every luxury home, hotel, and plaza had them. And the town had just set the last brick over our 14-acre snowmelt system in the village and Lionshead. It was also the time where we started to realize that the only way to address ever-increasing energy demands and climate change was to address heating the outdoors, since the building code does not. That sort of separate carte blanche world. Our friend Adam Palmer, who you guys may remember, created a program back in the day called EcoBuild, and most major ski resorts and progressive towns across the country had some version of a points-based beyond building code program. So it was sort of not prescriptive. You can assemble points in however way you could to make your building more sustainable. So back then, former council member Margaret Rogers asked us to take a look at this REMP program for Vail. So we did, and we took a good shot at that policy change. But ultimately, the council and the PEC at that time decided that Vail should either offset their own system entirely or figure out a way to lead by example and power our snowmelt in a cleaner way, in addition to getting current with our building energy code and making our own facilities more efficient. So we did all those things, and what you see today is round three of our attempt at addressing exterior energy use. So a few months ago, the town council gave us the green light to move forward with the exterior energy offset program as a policy decision, but they would like us to return to the PEC to vet the details for them. So this is just another introduction to reorient everyone to the program, and in the next meeting we'll dig into all the details. So just for fun, I did a calculation to estimate just how much private and public snowmelt we have. Vail has the largest gas-powered municipal system in the world. There are places like Holland, Michigan, and Iceland that have bigger municipal systems, but they're powered by waste heat. And when you combine with our private snowmelt, the size is really staggering. So public, we've got about 14 acres, as I mentioned. Hotel and retail, about 12 and a half acres. And private in just a few neighborhoods, so the neighborhoods where you would suspect there to be snowmelt, 32.5 acres. So in total, we're like 63 acres, 48 football fields, and 7 megawatts. So the private exceeds our public snowmelt by 2 to 3 times. So
not to interrupt, but are the slides supposed to be advancing with this? Or
no, they're not. I'm just talking about it. Yes.
I just wanted to double check. Okay.
No, intro. Intro only. So that brings me to our goals. Why are we doing this, right? So Vail has adopted in their strategic plan a goal of reducing at least 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 and 80 by 50 from our 2014 level. So one of the strategies within those town council goals are to adopt a program like the Exterior Energy Offset Program. This is a look at our greenhouse gas emissions inventory. So as you can see, natural gas tops out our inventory by quite a bit, followed by on-road transportation. So that's all the cars and trucks. And the reason that gas and transportation are so far ahead, and even now, lots far ahead, because the building electricity is greatly, greatly reduced, because Holy Cross Energy, as you may have seen in the paper, has just approached and for the month of March, actually achieved 100% renewable energy for the entire month of March. They average in the high 80s, and next year anticipate getting even higher. So thankfully, Holy Cross has really taken care of our electricity carbon emissions situation. But as you can see, we've got a long way to go when it comes to gas. So the exterior energy is a lot more low-hanging fruit than it is to building emissions from heat.
Is that just Town of Vail vehicles, or is that all vehicles operating within Town of Vail?
Yes, that's okay. The whole community, yep. So exterior energy, as you might suspect, it's all those outdoor amenities, so pools and spas and heat tape and snowmelt and the fire pits that you see. And most of these systems, almost 100%, are run on natural gas boilers. So it is it's a big draw, and it's a outsized energy use for per square foot. And I'm going to let Cam talk about that as I turn it over to him to talk about why exterior energy matters.
Thanks, Kristen. Yeah, so why does exterior energy matter? Energy is dealt with in the energy code, but that typically only extends to the building envelope. When you get to these exterior sources, snowmelt, pools, spas, they're not really treated the same as your insulation, like your R values, your windows, your heating system, all those things that make a building energy efficient. And so what we've seen is kind of we've seen snowmelt and other exterior sources outside of building envelopes that consume a ton of energy. We've looked at some studies and actually have experience with our own snowmelt, and know that heating the outdoors is about 10 times the energy cost and associated emissions compared to heating inside a building. And it's a wide range of what those emissions represent as far as the total building's output, but it can be 40 to 80% of the building's emissions. And so when we look at that, we say if we want to reduce emissions, it makes sense to start with the outdoor energy use first. And these exterior energy offset programs, it's really an opportunity community-wide to get in front of the problem, maybe stop the bleeding, make sure that we're not continuing to grow emissions outside of our buildings while we have goals, right, to actually reduce emissions.
Tell them what they're looking at there.
Yeah, so in this photo we've got in the upper right, that's what snowmelt looks like when it's being installed. It's tubing that gets installed underneath the sidewalk or the driveway. And all of that tubing is connected to typically a gas boiler. And so that gas boiler has to work to heat up the surface to a point where the snow is melting and even evaporating. And you can see that in the infrared image there of a driveway. I went last winter and took a lot of infrared images around Vail, and almost every private residence has them. As well as a lot of the public snowmelt that Kristen has mentioned. And this has been studied. This was done by Taylor Critchlow, who's a local engineer. And so you can see the little blue is a typical, you know, what it takes to heat on an annual basis in BTUs. A BTU is like the energy in a match, so it's not very much energy by itself, but we're talking about hundreds of thousands of BTUs potentially per square foot for snowmelt. And that's actually been verified. I would say it's been verified here in Vail as well, but it you know, it exceeds or approaches 200,000 BTUs per square foot in Beaver Creek. That's another big system that's out there. And then ours is similar as well. We made some improvements on reducing that. You can kind of see, I included this graph just to show you the outsized impact of energy that exterior energy has. And that's for snowmelt. Pools and spas are similar, maybe worse. You know, keeping that pool warm enough to swim in all winter takes an incredible amount of energy as well. And folks around the mountain region have looked at this and worked on this issue for a number of years. And exterior energy offset programs are common throughout the Vail Valley. They may be called by different names. As Kristen mentioned, Eagle County's had a point system around for quite some time. And we're starting to see new policies come in that are requiring exterior energy to be powered by renewables or electricity. That's the case in Steamboat Springs, or as in Crested Butte, where they've actually banned new gas systems, just in recognition of the emissions that come with those. Or in the Roaring Fork Valley, where they've actually put a cap on the amount of energy that any given new project is allowed, and snowmelt and other exterior energy would be included within that. In the Roaring Fork Valley, they've had a REMP program for over 20 years, and so they're kind of evolving beyond. And we see the exterior energy offset program as it's a kind of a necessary first step when you're looking to tighten down, and regulate more so than the energy code. So staff has spent quite a bit of time on this. In previous years, we were part of a code cohort that looked at making improvements to existing or adopting new exterior energy offset programs. A lot of these programs were developed a number of years ago when the information wasn't as well known about the energy costs. So if you're looking at Eagle County, for example, they've recently made changes to reflect the increased awareness that exterior energy is actually very energy intensive, more so than was ever believed previously. And then we've been in front of PEC and got some feedback and had some good conversations, I think, with a couple members who are here today. But again, you know, for the new folks, we want to bring everybody, we want to level set and bring everybody to the same point. We also hosted a design professional roundtable with architects, builders, and developers just to hear their thoughts. We actually had pretty strong support from that group. They kind of recognized that this is already common practice down Valley. Many of those developers and builders are used to this program, and frankly surprised that we didn't already have it in Vail. But a lot of the common issues were brought up at that time about things around steep driveways or necessary exemptions, say for public safety. And there's just a couple other sort of tricky issues that were brought up. But I would say in that meeting, the overwhelming consensus was like, yeah, this makes sense. We probably need something like this. And then the Building and Fire Board of Appeals, you know, they work closely with the building department. And we've also worked with our building department at times to see, can this fit into your process? Because programs like this are typically triggered by a building permit, say for a boiler or something like that. And we think, and also speaking with other communities that already have this program, it seems like it's running pretty smoothly. We've talked to Derek Place in Avon quite a bit about this, and he hasn't raised any flags for us as far as implementation. And then we did speak with town council and got some direction this year to move forward with bringing the details of this program together and trying to figure out, and that's part of why we're here today, you know, what makes sense for Vail, where is a good starting point. What you'll find in these programs, and I'll explain this in a little bit, is there's a lot of levers you can pull to make it more aggressive, less aggressive, include more things, include fewer things. That has an impact on fees. And we don't want to get too deep into the weeds on fees right now, But just know that, you know, you, the council, yourselves, you can provide input on how strongly this program could be initiated. So how does the EEOP program work? What it's doing is using an engineered calculator, and these are common. They've been around for a while. We actually have one prepared by Resource Engineering Group out of Crested Butte. So they've been refining these calculators for a long time. And when you put in snowmelt, for example, there's a calculation that says over 20 years, that snowmelt is predicted to release this amount of emissions. And these emissions can be offset either by installing renewable energy like solar on site or paying a fee in lieu that is then used to reduce emissions here in the local community. And that's an important point. Those fees, they're not to be used for like a slush fund or a different program. They really need to be used to reduce emissions in the local community. And there's a good reason for that and a good impact that we're going to talk about. And you can do a combination of those things as well. Let's see, we're not switching yet, are we? So just an overview, Avon, Basalt, you know, Eagle County's had it for quite a while. Minturn is the most recent to add an EEOP policy. And then statewide in the Roaring Fork Valley especially, I'm not sure Summit County's adopted it. Breckenridge definitely has, Snowmass, Telluride. And when we've looked back at the fees that these programs have generated and the emissions, they can vary quite a bit because a single development can introduce a lot of snowmelt, a lot of exterior energy. But you know, typically you'll see in the tens of thousands to the hundreds of thousands, maybe even $1 million can be generated in a year time from these programs. And that's information we can provide down the road as well if you're interested. But it is highly variable. And you know, in a community like Vail, we're kind of built out. So we don't really know what the fees would necessarily look like as far as, you know, being generated from new developments, but we know that new developments are coming. And you know, if the fees are not the important thing, it's the emissions reductions and those changes that, you know, I think have more of an impact and are more important to stay focused on. So again, those fee and lose though, they focus on the 20-year emissions of a piece of equipment or a system. The efficiency of the equipment matters too. So a very efficient boiler will pay less fees than a less efficient boiler. If you use renewable energy within that, like geothermal, that would also reduce it. The calculators have gotten very sophisticated to account for these emissions over time. But of course, all of those options are not always the most practical. You know, you may not have enough roof area for solar. You might not have, you know, the geothermal resource nearby. So it's important to build in some flexibility and allow people to either do a combination of fee and lieu plus on-site. Some people might elect to do the fee entirely, but it does drive choices and it does drive more sustainable thinking because the more efficient the system, the less the fee. And you know, sometimes maybe you don't need all that snowmelt. Maybe it's important right in front of the right in front of the garage. Maybe it doesn't need to be the whole driveway, that kind of thing. And those fees are linked to the cost of solar, which has remained pretty steady at $3,500 per kilowatt installed. So that's kind of how that program balances those two parts of the offset or mitigation.
Quick question on equipment choice.
Yeah.
And you might get to this later, but verification. Because, you know, right now I fill out an ERI, say I'm doing a home on, you know, performance path,
yeah.
I do an ERI rating, right, instead of going prescriptive. You're always making assumptions on equipment. That's often happening before the time of permit, and you may not have a full MEP set spec'd for equipment.
Yeah.
And, you know, things may change from the time of permitting. I've never once had an inspector actually verify efficiency on a unit. You know, if you're going performance path, then your rater is verifying that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not covered under this. So are you anticipating a kind of verification in the field portion of this, or how does that happen?
I do expect that. Mm-hmm. Our current building inspectors are aware of these type of programs because they get asked about them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're they're often asked, hey, when do you come out and inspect the, you know, exterior energy, or where do we pay the fee? So I would see that as being part of that inspection process.
Okay.
And our building department, I think, does a great job with that. Now, as part of adopting this program, there'll be some careful coordination and making sure that the checklists and the tools and the processes are in place. We've been able to learn a lot from our neighbors on that stuff, like down in Avon and Minturn, even as they rolled this out.
Because it's just very easy to say, we're going to put in some crazy sear condenser, right, on a worksheet, and then not actually put it in the field.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, typically the certificate of occupancy is held up until either the fees are paid or the on-site renewable is installed.
Okay.
So we've talked to PC a number of times about this before, and, you know, the feedback that we heard was this program needs to be fair and equitable. Needs to be practical to implement. It needs to be effective at reducing emissions. That's the purpose of it. And it needs to be consistent with the town's practices and policies. And that it, you know, should be widely communicated and messaged and have those exemptions built in and drive sustainable behavior change. That's what this is all about. And we definitely heard about, will this discourage people from making efficiency improvements, right? Because if they replace a boiler, now they may have to be enrolled in this program, and that could discourage people. So I think these are all really fair points. And I think this doesn't capture, we have many hours of discussion. So I don't want to put words in people's mouths for conversations that happened several years ago. But from our point of view, I think a lot of these can be addressed, if not all of them. I think they're important points, and we have to be careful and conscientious about how a program like this is rolled out, because it is a significant change, and it will have a cost associated with it. So we don't want that cost to fall inequitably on projects that may have like a public benefit. I could think of, say, the hospital and like the helicopter pad is snow melted, right? There's really good reasons for having some exterior energy. And in fact, in the program design, typically things like the first 200 feet of snow melt are exempted, or hot tubs are not included, that kind of thing. But we would love to get the feedback from the PC on how to best deal with some of these considerations. And Brad and John, you've been privy to these conversations, so love to hear from you guys. When we have a discussion about, if you can remember.
I remember.
And just a little diagram, you've got your heated driveway, they come in for a building permit, and they're either gonna do on-site renewables or pay that fee or a combination thereof. And that fee is gonna go into a community fund that's only available to Town of Vail residents and will only support Vail projects on typically existing buildings, right? So we're not gonna recommend that you take that money and put it into new developments, for example. It's about helping people with the not insignificant cost of retrofitting buildings for solar, for electrification, heat pumps, insulation, air sealing. And we have programs that are already doing this to great effect, but we could really supercharge a lot of those programs with those fees. And I'll let Kristen take it from here, but that at the end of the day, that's the purpose, making sure that the community can move towards town council goals to reduce emissions.
Great, thanks, Cam. Before I get into the benefits and our wrap up here, does anybody have any questions about anything Cam talked about how the program works or what it's designed to do or anything the PEC said in the past?
Have any of these, our neighboring communities, looked at banning outdoor energy sources, period, instead of just regulating it and doing fees and lieus to offset and just saying
they've done
can't
gas
do
bans
it.
I mean, that's the closest right?
Crested Butte has banned new gas just in downtown Crested Butte. That's not a huge area.
New gas outdoor sources,
just outright
gas entirely.
Okay.
Steamboat Springs, I believe, has put a ban in on gas-fired outdoor uses, so that's why they're looking at geothermal, for example.
Okay.
In the Vail Valley, Most folks are working on building code tweaks right now towards not necessarily full electrification, but how do you encourage and support more efficiently electrified buildings? And where movement or change has happened in exterior energy, it's been to increase the calculator, basically the emissions associated with outdoor energy. Because 20 years ago when these were being developed, they relied on manufacturers' specifications, like this is how much gas we expect these boilers to use. But then that doesn't factor in, you know, we're at high elevation, that reduces efficiencies. We tend to have long run times on our snowmelt systems. You know, we have long winters. And so the actual energy use was much higher than everybody expected. Now that has been a little bit of a push and pull. So in Eagle County, they're not gonna go to 100% like overnight. It's a gradual stepping up of those fees or offsets that are required. You know, there's definitely been pushback in other communities, like in Eagle, it was a big issue because there was a development that was gonna have a lot of outdoor fire pits, and the fees ended up being higher than they would have liked, and they kind of pushed back on that. But most of the communities now are moving to amend or upgrade these EEOP programs, not banning gas entirely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Where are we with the geothermal in Vail? I know that the Sustainability Department had presented to council on having some money in the budget go towards that. Where are we in that at this point?
Well, phase one is underway. So that's like our very first starting node over by the library between Evergreen and Dobson and that area. So we're very excited about that. And we also contracted with a company called McKinstry, that's our energy service provider, to do a governance structure for the next two phases, so that for the bigger district, so the Lion's Head district. They got almost $2 million grant to continue design on that, so we're excited to keep moving that forward. And we have our eye on another grant, and then there's the IRA tax credits that we're hoping to initiate. So that's a, you know, $50 million project-ish, and it's major, but it would be incredibly impactful for our greenhouse gas emissions. So that's why we feel good about asking others to join us. I think now that we've got, you know, it would at the time the REMP program was initiated way back, you know, 20 years ago, it would have cost the town something like $9 million to simply offset it in the way that it was designed originally. And that was at $16 a square foot. I think what Cam mentioned is, you know, the energy intensity per square foot of an outdoor heated space, especially snowmelt, is like 60 some dollars a square foot. It's not 16, you know, like the actual impact is much, much higher. So you'll see in that calculator when we bring it back. But because the geothermal project is where it's at, I think it's good timing. And it's got a lot of momentum statewide. The governor has the Heat Beneath Our Feet effort. Lots of entities working on moving geothermal forward.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I guess I should, on the tails of that, ask about the waste. You said Iceland is using waste to fuel their...
Well, Iceland has high-temperature geothermal resources, so you know a lot of the country's infrastructure is powered by that.
Okay.
But what's making geothermal very potent is the use of waste heat. So, for example, our plan for the Lion's Head Village would use waste heat from the wastewater treatment plant, and that is enough waste heat every hour just in the water that's going into the creek, which, by the way, has to be cooled anyway.
Yeah.
If we were to put in a heat exchanger, take that heat out, that's actually enough heat to power the snowmelt system that comes out of the Arabelle. The Arabelle they have their own snowmelt, and then they do town snowmelting in Lion's Head Village as well. So that waste heat is kind of that special sauce to go beyond just geothermal and actually capture BTUs and move them around where they're needed.
Good.
And then the really interesting development is with the utility hitting 100% renewable energy, they actually have periods of time where they have too much renewable energy on the grid, and they're looking for ways to flex that, where you know, where can they store that renewable energy so it could be used later? And we see geothermal networks as a prime opportunity to do that, because you can charge up those bore fields when the sun's shining. You could run an electric boiler. I like to say you're kind of juicing up the system, and the utility will actually pay you to do that. So we're working on some analysis right now to go back to the utility and tell them whether we think this system can really do that the way they want to do it. But it's there's a lot of exciting stuff with thermal networks in particular, where geothermal is a big component, but you're also introducing waste heat and excess renewable energy into that system.
Okay, thank you.
Because the geothermal acts as a heat sink, right? Like you can sink that into it and use it later, correct?
That's right. That's right. The ground itself does, and the loop helps facilitate that.
Like a big thermal battery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
so we're trying to calculate just how much flex that would give. So if Dr. Hannigan, the CEO of Holy Cross, were here today, he would say, I would love to be able to plug into the system, dump energy on a Monday and pull it out on Thursday. Can we do that? And so we're trying to figure out if that's possible, because not exceeding the peak load that they have, they buy power from Xcel Energy and other sources, is incredibly valuable to them to load shape, especially when you have renewable energy and you produce more at a time where you maybe don't need it and you need somewhere to put it, right? So that saves the members money, and it's a great effort. And you know that Gore Creek is one of our other environmental foci, so you'll see that, especially in a year like this year where we have such low water flows and such a lack of water, it's a lot easier to heat up the creek, which is incredibly dangerous for aquatic life. So it's getting more and more important as we go through the years, and we're going to have these drought years. This is not going to be an anomaly, you know, as climate change increases and we see these effects. The Water and Sanitation District may be subject to temperature regulations that exceed right now what we're at. And they really only exceed it at certain times of year right now in October, but it's getting increasingly important. So finding a way to dump out that waste heat in a useful way instead of paying millions of dollars for cooling towers, which nobody wants to see out in West Vail, and all the venting that that entails, and the space, and the electricity that it would cost to run them. So we hope that it'll be a nice synergy to capture all that waste heat and put it in the ground. Other questions? No? Okay. Okay, so the benefits of a program like this, obviously, right? We wouldn't do this if we couldn't ensure that the emissions from outdoor energy use didn't continue to rise. We're kind of focusing on these extraneous ones. It's not life safety or heating that we really would be concerned with for our citizens. It doesn't limit that. It gives the project owner a lot of flexibility and choice of how they want to design the system. They could reap all the benefits and put renewable energy on their home or business, or they can put it into the fee and it'll be directed in a community driven way. Let's see. Counselor impacts, I think we've got to cover that. So outcome, I mentioned we're going to achieve our greenhouse gas emissions reductions, hopefully hit our goals. Really, the idea is to minimize extraneous outdoor energy use, not to just collect fees, and then to mitigate it and benefit the Vail community. So these are some examples of community impact for these funds. So pretty cool, right? You can get efficient lighting for schools, and you can upgrade your HVAC systems, put them into rebates, green workforce development, and it's a nice way to leverage that, especially for deed-restricted housing. So this is a study that Pitkin County did when they implemented their program. So this data is a little old, but it still stands. So that first column, what you're seeing is the total homes involved in their rent program. So 121 homes. And the second column is those that mitigated on site. And then the third, the little orange, dark orange there, is the amount that paid into the fund. And the fourth column, that green column there, is what CORE, Community Office for Resource Efficiency over in the Roaring Fork Valley, calculated as their program savings. So basically, they found that the money that they put in had a 6-to-1 effectiveness for their input. So for every dollar they spent, they got six times as much in energy savings. So it worked out really, really well. So they collected those fees, and then they put them into energy efficiency projects and really made quite a difference.
The energy efficiency projects that the funds are going to, are those solely public projects, or are some of those funds designated for people to help them make their homes more energy efficient, especially people who may not have a lot of money to do so.
Yeah, the latter. Yeah. So if you have an abundance of funds, they could have grant programs where you could apply, but then they also are put into rebate programs for individuals, or but definitely not just public. It's all a mix. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other questions on this one? No? Okay. Okay, so we've arrived at 2026. Why should we do this now? We've got enough vetting and lessons learned out there to understand what pitfalls to be aware of and how to shape these programs and how to make them effective. We are finally on track with our own emissions for our snowmelt system, which is amazing. It mentions the EPC project, which stands for Energy Performance Contract. So in addition to the geothermal project that we're working on, the town's also doing facility-wide energy efficiency and renewable energy programs. So that is coming through this year and probably into a little bit of next year, but we're excited to see the emissions from that. We expect to save another $250,000 a year from that program, so we're excited. And when we did our emissions inventory, we realized that to reach our 2030 and 2050 goals, we kind of need to start all this now. You know, we probably needed to start it 20 years ago, but the next best time is today. So our impact will grow over time, and we'll be able to save those emissions. Okay, so this is my last slide, and we're here just to answer your questions and take your feedback, and then next time, we're going to bring back specific examples and the calculator and tell you how that all works, and then talk about some of those design decisions. So what's in, what's out? So are we exempting, you know, steep driveways or pathways from the hospital? You know, those are common things that you'd want to include, that if someone's in a wheelchair, you want to make sure that they're not running into ice and snow. And we understand those are important health safety considerations with snow melts. And then do we expand the uses beyond those three we mentioned? So fire pits, pools and spas. You can include things like heat trace that you would have on your roof to prevent leaking and things like that. So I think that's it. Anything else to add, Ken? No? Okay. All right. We're happy to take your feedback and questions.
I think one thing would be helpful for maybe some of the commissioners that were not here last time you presented. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about how the choices around percent offset works in kind of, you know, whether you fully offset 50% mm-hmm. and kind of what's been done with other municipalities around here?
Perfect. You want to take that, Cam, or would you like me to?
Yeah, so what Commissioner Hagedorn is talking about is if you were to say we're going to offset 100% of those emissions, that is a setting in the calculator, toggle it to 100%. That's including all of the emissions, and then the fees or offsets are related to that. They're proportional to that percentage. So the reason why you might want to come in at 100% is we're late to the game. You know, we're playing catch up, and that's going to make sure that 100% of those emissions are accounted for. Why you might come in less than that, like 50%, is the sticker shock for people. To go from 0 to 100 is a big change, and you know the community might need some time to adjust. So a lot of communities have said, you know, we're going to go to 50%, and that might not be perfect. But going back to the slide that Kristen presented with the 6-to-1 effectiveness in Pitkin County, they said by law that program has to have a 3-to-1 effectiveness ratio with those funds. So they've exceeded it. In recent years, that fund has kind of slowed down for a variety of reasons. But you know, the offset was legally required to perform, and it did perform well. And so even at a 50% offset, those fees are gonna pick up a lot of that slack. So it really comes down to how strongly we want to regulate this from the get-go. Now, in Eagle County, they are ratcheting up over the next couple years. And you may have seen that in the paper, right? Some developments have said, hey, all of a sudden we have this large fee. We weren't ready for that. What are you all doing? And then it's like, well, this is why we have the program. And, you know, I personally think meeting in the middle would make me a lot happier than not having it at all. Of course, going to 100% will get us to our goals faster. And like I said, we are behind, 2030 is right around the corner. But this is a decision that I think the community, you know, has to support and get behind. And I mean, we've heard support from builders and developers who know it's going to cost more, but want to do the right thing for the environment. But yeah, that sticker shock of 100% can be a real thing as well.
So then, I guess, how do we educate not only the builders and the architects and the contractors, everybody that's involved? Yeah. How do we educate the public, first of all, those of us who live here, and secondly, second homeowners or people who want to build these projects that are also going to be built during this time after the code has been changed? How do we implement that with them? And I think, first of all, is making other people understand who live here that can't necessarily afford to build these gigantic homes with hot tubs and funiculars and whatever else. How do we learn how to, you know, incorporate some of this stuff into our own homes? You know, whether I have a heated driveway or I have heat tape at my house or things like that, or gas fireplace. Like, I can go through Holy Cross also, and I can have all of that, you know, everything set off with carbon, you know, exchange. So that's great. And I can't do solar on my home because there's too many trees and things that are blocking the intake. So, you know, I just want to know how we can educate folks and let them know that there's resources, whether it's Waukee Mountains or Holy Cross, that can help. You know, they can do energy assessments and things like that, which, you know, is expensive. And I know for a while there they did one for free for a lot of community people who live in the community and wanted to get involved. But it's very, like, the packet that I received is thick. And so, you know, it's a lot of information. So I just am curious about that, the educational piece.
It's a good question. I mean, I think the good news for us is because we've taken our time getting here, that the builders and developers and the contractors, they know this program really well. And I think people have generally heard about it, but what you do is you have a nice long lead time. So we make people aware and, hey, get your permit in if you avoid this, I suppose. And then we continue to do what we're working with Waukee Mountains on, pushing the Energy Smart program. There's double rebates in Vail, and the energy audits are still free. So at least people can have that benefit. They're like, look, we understand this is, you know, this is a factor, especially if you feel like you need snowmelt in a major remodel or a new build. But that has to be part of the initial packet. Like, as soon as you start talking design, start thinking about how you might minimize outdoor energy use. You know, that the fire pits and those amenities are a bit of another story. I mean, people really love their fire pits in town here, and it's a hard one, you know. We recognize that it creates ambiance, but it's a lot more intensive than you think, and they're on a lot. So, you know, there's over the years with timers and gas line size and things like that, we initially, many years ago, tried to reduce the size of a gas line. And we thought, well, that would work, you know, like, okay, so we went from a, you know, 3-inch gas line to a quarter or whatever. But what it ended up happening is people would just sort of put more of them in. So it wasn't a great workaround. So it feels like this is better to make conscientious choices about some of this stuff.
And I would add to that just two thoughts. You know, one is most people are visiting Vail because of the environment. So let's all remind people that, you know, we have strong environmental protections here to preserve this place that people love. Going back to the town's charter. And then regionally, there's been so much work done on this that all of the calculators, the materials, like we shared that fact sheet, we're sitting in a good position where most of the marketing and you know, resources have actually already been developed because our neighboring communities have done that. And we like to work together, so we've been participating in those meetings. So we have access to quite a trove of, you know, we were just looking at Minturn. You know, they have a really detailed checklist that they give out to folks so they can really understand what it is they need to do. And, you know, we have been offered by Avon, hey, here's all our materials, you know, please use them. You know, I think everybody in the neighboring communities are rooting for this program here, good. You know.
Is it part of our survey that we just received?
I don't think it's in the community survey, like, specifically. We've asked it in the past, and people generally say we want you to do something on climate, but it's not as specific as this.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the home energy rebate program, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. with our partners at Waukee Mountain and the Energy Smart Colorado program. So right now, if you're a deed-restricted home in Vail, it's free. If you're a community priority member, it's $25. This is for a $500 energy audit. And those priority community members include, you know, firefighters, police, teachers, frontline workers. And then it's only $50 if you're a homeowner in Vail to get that energy assessment done. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there are double rebates. You can get a couple thousand dollars for things like heat pumps, you know, solar, insulation, air sealing. I used to work very much in that world doing the audits and the retrofits.
A lot.
And it's a great program, but it's kind of very modestly funded at the moment. Mm-hmm. We would like to see that program grow. And I think right now, if you can get a couple thousand dollars, it might catch your attention, it might not. But what if we offered, you know, $5,000, $10,000 to a regular homeowner to do something like add solar or a heat pump? Now you're starting to catch people's attention. And that's where, in the Roaring Fork Valley, they've had a lot of success getting these rebates out the door and engaging. It goes beyond just giving somebody money. We mentioned the green workforce. You know, you need a workforce to support that. And when you start introducing rebates, you've also got to have the training and the, you know, supporting folks to get more education. That stuff all kind of goes hand in hand. And in places that have been successful with that, you really see a whole economy developing around, you know, green energy efficiency improvements, which, you know, let's face it, it's good for household economies, it's good for workforce, it's good for the environment. It's really win-win type of programs.
Yeah.
And I'll say, to answer your first question, putting my builder-developer hat on, Town of Vail is the exception. It's kind of the expectation that you pay for this stuff anymore. Yeah. You know, it's more like we've been getting a free pass in Vail. The only municipalities in Eagle County that don't do it besides Vail currently are Town of Gypsum and Town of Eagle that I'm aware of. Maybe Town of Basalt.
Right. Eagle has it now.
I think Eagle has it now. They might
have
walked it back a little bit.
They also now, and Eagle also has the additional energy efficiency requirements above and beyond the IECC there as well. So it's more the norm now.
Okay.
I don't think it'll be a shock to the builder and developer community if this goes through.
That's the upside.
Yeah.
And you know, the rebate programs that we mentioned, the town funds it at $40,000 a year, and we can, you know, people can stack those with the Holy Cross rebates and others from the state, but you can also put $1,000 in Vail toward an EV, which incidentally is switching all of the cars, if we could wave our magic wand and switch every car in Vail to an EV, is one of our top greenhouse gas emission strategies. So it just puts, you know, kind of moves that up just a little bit more to the attractive side when you're thinking about buying a new car. So, yeah.
In terms of exceptions, I'm sure you'll be talking about, life safety. You know, one of the hot topic ones last time this came through was freestanding hot tubs up to a certain square footage.
Right.
I think Commissioner Robin Smith called it at that point, you know, people's expectation of their God-given right to a hot tub.
I remember that.
You anticipating that as an exemption or no?
Well, we talked about it with the PC, and you're right, Brad, that is what came up. But most of those are electric that are plug-ins. So it would factor into the calculator as an electric hot tub, which would largely be renewable because it's powered by Holy Cross. So your God-given right to have a hot tub in Colorado might be fine if it's an in-ground spa pool, you know, situation. Those are gas.
The big in-ground. You're targeting the big in-ground gas-fired heater. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's gas. I mean, I don't know any of those that are powered by gas. I mean, like maybe the snorkel tubs. You know, those ones that are round and they're powered by maybe propane even. They're pretty rare.
Okay.
Yeah.
Most programs exempt the first 200 square feet of snow melt. So if you wanted to melt the apron in front of your garage, for example, it would be exempt.
Or walkway.
And they usually exempt the first 80 square feet for spas. I can't remember if there's a pool exemption, but that 80 square feet for a spa, that would be a hot tub. It would be exempted.
And I think Eagle County just walked back their exterior by adding the 100 square feet of exempted for entries, because I think there was a lot of pushback on that. Maybe a year ago they added that exemption to EcoBuild. So I think that's pretty in line with what's happening.
Yeah, and you know, not to say we've got to exempt anything. Whether it's 80 square feet or 300, it's still got an impact. but.
Why are those other municipalities exempting 100 square feet here or whatever? Why are they doing that? Is that so their constituents aren't up in arms? Because it kind of seems like it's undermining the point of the program anyway.
It does. I think they compromised and thought, well, I guess if we get the major, excessive, huge areas, we can back off on the small ones. I don't know. Maybe we may not land that way here. You know, maybe an in-ground 80 square foot spa is counted just as much as something larger. You know, so we'll just have to see what you all think. Yeah.
Some communities, we were just looking at Minter, I think they have a maximum as well, 6,000 square feet for snowmelt. Mm-hmm. So that would be a big one, but I've seen those. There,
minimum
we have some that are that big, yeah. Even on private homes.
It's the maximum like per property, per project?
Yeah, per property, I think. 6,000 square feet of exterior snow melting. You know, which is like, you know, if you have a 100-foot driveway and... It's
and a fee, or just that whole thing is exempt? That whole amount.
That's the maximum.
Yeah, I mean, because you could add a fee to that too. You know,
they have to pay the fee, but they also have doubly said you can't have more.
There's a point past which you can't construct it.
Have you considered? That I understand, but. Have you considered a stepping scale? You know, kind of like we do our building permits.
Exactly.
The first so many square feet is X. The second the next square foot is Y, and so on and so on.
Yeah. I don't think the calculator does that.
It gets a little squirrely to put in a system like that. Just adds more complexity. And I think at the end of the day, you want to be able to clearly communicate, you know, this is the cost per square foot. And that way, I think one big benefit would be for people to just take pause. You know, obviously some projects have enough money to do whatever they want. But when you're saying, hey, there's a consequence to just going wild with this stuff, mm-hmm. maybe there'll be some more thoughtful design choices. And you know, I understand it's hard, this is one of the reasons that the town has snow melts. Hard to plow. It's hard to have the manpower. Where do you put the snow? Your cobbled driveway might not like plowing. So there are reasons. But it's important that, and going to, how do you spread the word? I think once people start to see, hey, this actually has an impact, you know, on the environment. It's interesting how few people actually realize there's so much snow melting in Vail, because it's kind of invisible. You just sort of say, hey, boy, they do a great job of shoveling and plowing here, don't they? But you don't see that big boiler running in the background to make that happen.
And it's made those really steep driveway situations possible. Mm-hmm. And they don't always have to. Some lots are tough and you have to have a steep driveway, but most of the time it's a design decision that mm-hmm. is just, we just want that, you know, we want to be able to have, whether it's more GRFA or if it's, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. Whereas if you didn't have that capability, you would never do that. You know, you would design your driveway, you would design your roof lines differently. So they're design decisions that we've kind of swung all the way to everything is snow melted to, we'd like to see a little bit more thoughtful decisions, and if we're going to have them, at least let's try to mitigate it somehow and try to offset this. We have a whole new village coming in West Lion's Head. You know, a whole heck of a lot of it is going to be snow melted, I'm sure, because there's going to be plazas, Arrive Vail, the whole remodel of the transportation center, the entire top will likely be snow melted. And so these are all decisions that we're going to have to weigh in. You guys will see them and have to make those decisions about what level of offset, what level of carbon are we willing to accept with all those big projects. So, I mean, it's going to be transformational for the town, I think, both those projects. Other questions?
Further questions for commissioners? Anything else?
Thank you.
Do we, are you looking for some guidance? Do you want to kind of have us weigh in on kind of our final thoughts and comments on going forward, or how do you want to?
Yeah. If you have anything you'd like to share with us right now, certainly. But when we come back, that's when we'll be asking for decisions, you know. So what should we include? Should it be 50% of an offset? Do you want to offset the whole thing? Are we exempting anything? So those are the program design decisions. And then what we'll do is create a package, and we'll present that to the town council with your recommendation for approval, denial, or somewhere in between there. And we will hopefully be off and running.
Great. I think it would be helpful to go down the line if commissioners are want to give kind of their two cents, even if it's brief. So we'd start with Commissioner Redeker.
Great.
I'm gonna wait till they present more details to me.
You want to? Okay.
Okay.
We'll just open it up. I mean, does anyone have comments? Any guidance? I've got a couple things that
Please.
I want to state, but anything else?
Well, I'm so new to this. Like, I am 100% on board and in support of this whole thing. I just am not quite sure what our role, I mean, I understand what our role is. I just don't know how to go about doing that. So I know we can't meet, but is there, you know, information? First of all, I'd love to have the slideshow sent to us so that we can read on that. And if there's anything else that's pertinent to this so that we can also formulate, you know, whatever the offsets, things like that are that we can weigh and look at from different communities. You know, just background information would be really helpful for me personally. That's pretty much the only comment I think I have at this
that's
point.
That's great, Catherine. And we're happy to meet with anybody individually if they'd like to you know, go through this. If it's all kind of new and, you know, lessons learned, we're happy to do that. Now, whatever just comes to mind is, okay. Oh gosh, think about that, or what about this? You know, so when we come back, we'll be able to answer those questions for you. But otherwise, next time we'll walk through it step by step, and we'll say, we think the program should be designed like this. We think it should be, for example, a 50% offset. We think the fee should be this. We think that these items should be included. Yes, we should do spas and fire pits and heat tape and all of those things. And then we think that these things should be exempted for safety.
Okay.
And so that's what we'll be back with. And if there's anything that pops in your head, like, oh, what about this? Let us know now or reach out and we'll include them.
Okay. And I was also looking at the charter for the Plan Environmental Commission, and part of your role is to research and advise on beneficial environmental programs. So I think a strong endorsement from this commission would be really helpful.
Yeah.
And this is it's not a quasi-judicial file, it's legislative, right? So you can talk about this outside
outside of
a meeting.
That's
it's
a good
not
point. Yeah.
It's not restricted to conversations outside
Excellent.
Of the chambers.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be helpful to go through the details because, like, at a high level, I'm thinking about the impact on residential, like, complexes where there's not a lot of funds in our in HOAs that aren't deed restricted either.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about, like, you know, whether these small exemptions make sense or not, if the goal, like, based on our goal, it's a lot to try to process without the details of where we think we want to land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we would love to bring you some examples. So we have different, you know, we're going to do a 1,000-foot, you know, snow melt and a small, you know, pool. And here's what that looks like in the calculator with the exemptions and the different levels. So we've got a lot of that stuff prepared, but we didn't want to, like, shock and overwhelm today.
I mean, my brain's jumping to, like, scope.
What's
the scope of this?
Yeah.
Who's really getting hit with it, and what are we really trying to accomplish? That's kind of,
makes sense. Yeah, Meg?
So as I'm very new to this issue, really new to this issue, in the sense that I'm looking at a slide that says expand beyond the big three, which I think are fire pits, pools, and spas. Is that correct?
The low hanging
snow melt pools
Where
and spas.
Where is snow melt? Okay.
And I'm sorry, that was my fault. I was looking at that and I was like, I should have clarified that.
I was surprised that it was not snow melt.
Pools, spas, and snow melt are the big three.
Pools, spas, snow melt.
Yeah.
So I'm new like that. which is, I guess, to say that I think of myself as being a reasonably well-informed citizen, and I was unaware of the intensity of this use. So I think there may be an education component left to have. I'm happy and plan to go back and look at that March 17th council meeting to see what their thoughts and what their directional impulse is. I appreciate and take seriously our role in an advisory legislative capacity, but I think it's important to know where they're thinking this is headed as well. Because I think the better and more clearly we can communicate the need for this and the goals for this, it's not only going to fall on the developers and the builders, it's going to fall on the homeowners, and that's where there's going to be a hue and cry. Which, whether it's right or whether it's not, we're a feedback community.
Right.
So I'm willing to do my legwork there. I have a lot to do, which is where I would start from today. I appreciate the information. And to that point, can you tell me the acreage again? Because that was striking. We have public 14 acres. We have private 32 and a half. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, and I can give you those neighborhoods if you like. I mean, I can email all this to you if it helps. But public, about 14, hotels and retail, we think about 12 and a half. Private in neighborhoods that are typical of having a lot of snow melt. So I excluded like Intermountain wasn't included, and you know, Matterhorn wasn't included, and the north side, Westvale, wasn't included. So it's mostly like, you know, Forest Road, Mill Creek Circle, golf course neighborhoods, the places you would expect to have a bunch of snow melt. So we think that roughly about 32 and a half acres. So all in, we're at like 63 acres. We think that's a really good estimate. And importantly, it's 7 megawatts. I mean, it's an enormous amount. I mean, even just the town of Vail's snow melt system is a little over 3, maybe 4% of Holy Cross Energy's entire electric load if you were to convert it to gas. You know what I mean? So,
but just if it's that the system. Town of Vail's public snow melt is less than a third of the snow melt we're running in the town.
Right.
That's a number that I find really surprising.
Yeah, when it's all connected, it seems like more, but when you realize just how much snow melt, back of houses, front of houses, many levels of snow melt. When you're driving around in the winter, and if you're with Cam, he has an infrared camera, I mean, it's pretty amazing. And then if you look at an aerial image in the winter, we really realize just how much we've got. And it's just continuing to contribute to our emissions. Yeah.
Just a point of clarification, the program that we're discussing is only going to apply to new construction and or renovations, correct?
Right. That's right. Well, that's what we would propose, but of course, you're welcome to recommend any version of that you like. Harder to retrofit, but we feel like, well, we're a government, and so therefore we can play the long game, which is really helpful. So even if it takes some time for people to come around, you know, that's how you legislate, and as things come on over time, you've hopefully gotten everybody up to, you know, speed.
If we started today, we would capture everything by 2050, right, as it's replaced. But you know, if we wait, then we don't have the opportunity for another 20 years on some of those systems.
I'll give you my thoughts. So just to give you some direction, at least for my opinion, as you make your next presentation. I'm for a minimal exemption for entries, just for kind of life safety, call it 100 square feet around there. I am in favor of this now. You know, I think last time we spoke, I was less so. It's because the town was actively not doing anything about its snowmelt system, gas-fired snowmelt system that time. I think we're morally in a better position to make this ask now that the town is pursuing the geothermal systems, that we're in better footing to ask the community to do this. So the 100, you know, about 100 square foot exemption for entries, I'm fine with. I'd be fine exempting a freestanding spa electric of a certain square footage, given the context of we're pulling from fairly renewable electric source now with Holy Cross. The terms of offset amount, personally, I'd be in favor of 50% now, then a phase in of 75, then 100, stepping up, I don't know, each step every 2 years or something. I think Eagle County is currently at 50, and they're stepping up in 2020 next year to 75, I think.
I think it's next year. I have to look if it's 27 or 28.
Yeah, but they're on a similar step up. That puts us in line with that, and it also just eases the intro. Everyone's not whacked at 100%, and 50% is more what they're used to seeing with Eagle County and whatnot. It kind of gets us in lockstep with our neighbors. I'm against including heat tape in the calculation. That's a maintenance issue, in my opinion. You're going to start physically damaging buildings if you discourage people from putting it in. It kind of pisses me off that the county has it in their calcs, honestly, when I think it's a critical thing to keep our buildings maintained well. And I think you should include pretty much every exterior energy source, whether it's outdoor fireplaces, spas, pools, and whatnot, beyond the big three. And finally, you heard this from me last time, but I do want the funds staying in the custody of Town of Vail and administered by Town of Vail, not going to a third party like Town of Avon did. I am very against that.
Okay. I would agree with that.
Yeah, usually, I mean, I think what we would recommend is that Town of Vail would hold the funds, but they would be administered by a committee that's determined. You know, is it a member of one of the boards, or is it citizens that are included, or is it staff? You know, somebody that oversees the administration of those funds, because they could get in the millions. You know, it depends.
Yeah, it's a large amount, so I want it staying in our custody.
Understand? Yep. Yeah, cool. Anything else?
Super reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thoughts too. Yeah. We're right with you on that. I think.
Yeah, nothing different. Yeah. I don't think.
Cool.
Great. Cool.
Anything else from commissioners? Well, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. Yeah. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys.
Nice to meet the new members.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Great to see you guys.
Thank you.
Good service for the town. A lot of work. And good luck to Greg.
Yeah.
Is there anything else in terms of information update from you, Greg, or any commissioners?
Another for me.
No?
He got engaged.
Yep. That's,
congratulations.
Oh, a lot of big news. Congrats.
Yep. Thank you very much.
There's not anything else on information update. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.